This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour, a co-production of WNYC Studios and the New Yorker.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. Helen Rosner is a staff writer and a food expert for the New Yorker. And one of her favorite things to do is to get together with another pro, another writer or a chef, and find some new things to cook. Now that, of course, is getting a little more complicated now.
Okay, I'm going to get the fennel.
I'm Helen Rosner. I'm a staff writer at The New Yorker, and I am standing in my Brooklyn kitchen right now in front of a cutting board with a pile of fennel, parsley, vinegar, a couple of bags of plantain chips. There's a lot of really cool, interesting stuff here in front of me, and the most important thing in front of me is my phone, which is currently in the middle of a FaceTime call with the chef Bryant Terry.
Hey, Helen.
Hey, how's it going? The author of the cookbook Vegetable Kingdom, which came out this year and which is one of my favorite books of the year. And we're going to make a recipe for, in the book, it's citrus and garlic herb braised fennel. And Bryant is in his kitchen in Oakland, California. Hey, Bryant.
Hey, Helen. I'm here in my backyard in Oakland, ready to cook.
Citrus. Tell me what goes into this recipe. It looks like there's a couple of different parts here.
Yeah, so the cornerstone of the recipe is actually the mojo, which is a kind of citrus and garlic condiment or marinade that's used in Cuban cooking, oftentimes to marinate meat. And I thought that it would be fun to take fennel bulbs and give them a nice sear to give them some color and a little crisp on the outside, and then baste them in this mojo in a similar way that one might baste a turkey.
Cool. So we should do that part first, right? We should make the sauce.
So yeah, the sauce should be made first because you want to let it rest for an hour so that the flavors can concentrate and marry, and that's going to set you up.
And I bet that really makes the garlic just get super garlicky too, right?
Yeah.
Just like a garlic explosion.
You had a garlic explosion.
I'm going to just start measuring out the orange juice and the lime juice and stuff while you talk to me about the recipe, okay?
Okay, cool.
So you've been doing this stuff for a long time. Have you always known that you were going to be a cookbook author? How did you come to this?
You know, I didn't. I thought I was going to be a professor. And when I was a grad student at NYU, I started doing more research on the Black Panther Party and their survival programs. And I think they were so cutting edge in their analysis and understanding this intersection of poverty, malnutrition, and institutional racism back in the late 60s. Mm-hmm. So their grocery giveaways and their free breakfast for children program really excited me to do my part in creating a more healthy and sustainable food system. Do you mind if I give you some cooking tips?
Yeah, tell me what to do.
Cooking? Okay. When you're working with citrus, a lot of people don't realize that you can actually get a lot more juice from your orange, lime, lemon if you actually take the fruit and then roll it with the palm of your hand back and forth for about 15 to 20 seconds, because that starts to break down the constitution of it. And so you'll get more, it'll yield more juice.
And a thing that I learned the hard way early in my cooking life is that if you're going to zest something and juice something, you always need to zest it first.
Yes, that's a great point. You definitely want to zest it first.
You know, Bryant, while you were talking just now, I was using your rolling out the citrus technique on some of the limes that I was about to juice. Hold on, I'm going to try this again. It was amazing. It was like Niagara Falls coming out of this lime. Yeah. is crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. You've changed the game for me. This is amazing.
It works well.
All right. Let's do the fennel. So we talked a little bit about fennel, but I was so struck by one of the phrases that you use to describe your approach to fennel. You talk about blackifying it and that you want to bring to food like this sense of your blackness and the blackness of the context of your culture, and use this like very beautiful phrase, your blood and spiritual ancestors, which I think is such a moving way of talking about like the communities that we arise from. Has it always been kind of a conscious choice for you to blackify food?
I feel like more than blackifying it, my approach has been about uplifting Black food. And, you know, that started when I was in culinary school, and I was just really, I won't say put off, but it was disappointing that there was such an emphasis on classical French and classical Italian techniques. And one of the things I feel like I've been fighting since I started this work is pushing back against the kind of reductive ways in which people imagine, think about, talk about Black food. And I think so often when people think about Black food, what they're thinking about are two different things. And sometimes they're kind of playing with each other. But one is antebellum survival food. I can't tell you how many times I've heard people kind of like vilify African-American cuisine and kind of reducing it to what they call slave food. You know, whatever the plantation owners didn't want, the scraps, the remnants of, you know, the vegetables or the animal viscera, whatever it is, like that's the stuff that was discarded and we just had to like eat it and make do. Why would we want to eat that? So there's that line of thinking. And then the other one is people reduce African-American cuisine to soul food, which in my mind are, you know, kind of big flavored meats and, you know, fatty desserts and overcooked vegetables that you might find at, you know, soul food restaurants. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like the kind of core, the traditional staples of African-American cuisine, we're talking about things like black-eyed peas, sugar snap peas, pole beans, lima beans, you know, dark leafy greens like collards, mustards, turnips, kale, dandelions. And so one of my major projects has been kind of helping people reimagine Black food in all its diversity and complexity.
And how does this connect to the fact that your recipes are vegan and that the cooking that you're doing is plant-based? Does that come from a similar politics?
Yeah, well, you know, in terms of the way that most people imagine veganism, they're either thinking about like upper middle class white suburbanites or kind of like young white hipsters who are living in, you know, urban centers, right?
Like veganism is like an aesthetic rather than a politic.
It's an aesthetic. It's something that white people own. And I think it's important that people understand that there's a history of Black food and health-led activism throughout the 20th century. And my first contact with the idea of vegetarianism came from Black Seventh-day Adventists. And then after I read Malcolm X and was obsessed with the Nation of Islam, I learned about the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his health ministry. He wrote two books, How to Eat to Live, which was his way of helping Black folks think about eating more healthfully. You know, I think about Dick Gregory, the comedian and social justice activist, and his emphasis on food. I mean, the thing that politicized me was a hip-hop song about factory farming called Beef by the rapper KRS-One from the group Boogie Down Productions.
Beef. What a relief. When will this poisonous product cease? This is another public service announcement. You can believe it or you can doubt it. Let us begin now with the cow. The way it gets to your plate and how. The cow.
And so, you know, Black people are suffering from the highest rates of preventable diet-related illnesses. Heart disease, hypertension, type 2 diabetes. I would argue that we needn't look any further than our own cultural cuisine in order to find better health.
I love that.
So you have all your vinegars, your citrus in there?
Yep, all my citrus is in there. I think it's garlic time. Could I use like a microplane or grate it or something like that?
You know, you could. I've never...
You're allowed to say no, you know? I feel like that was a tone of voice that implied to me that you think it's a bad idea. And you
no, I just hadn't
to.
Thought about it, but...
And we're going to let that intensify while everything else happens. I love fennel. I'm like super obsessed with fennel, and I don't really love black licorice. I just want to take a bite out of it.
You know what?
So good.
Let me do that too. I don't even know if I've ever even attempted to take like a full on. This is kind of like
I would eat it like
an apple bite. Oh. I'm gonna do this in Berkeley, and they're gonna think I'm a god. I'm gonna start me a cult, the cult of eating fennel rock.
So in Vegetable Kingdom, you assign a track to each recipe. Each recipe has a song, and you've got this gorgeous playlist at the beginning of the book that puts them all together. And the song that goes with this recipe is Afro Q, parentheses, Bembe, by Mongo Santa Maria from the album What Do You Mean? So what is it about this song that you particularly like?
Just the African rhythms. If I close my eyes, I just feel like I'm being transported back to New Orleans, to Havana, to Lagos. It's all about the African rhythms.
What kind of pan should I use for this?
You're good to go. That cast iron skillet is exactly where you want to be.
So I'm going to... Oh, yeah. You hear that sizzle? Okay, so I've warmed the sauce in the skillet. I have nestled beautifully in my golden pieces of fennel. And now we're going to let them braise. This is where the magic happens, right? All right. Let's take a bite. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. I'm obviously over here thinking that this is the bomb. What do you think?
This is the bomb. This is totally the bomb. That is the technical term, I think, for this dish.
Brian Terry talking with The New Yorker's Helen Rosner. Now, full disclosure, we skipped quite a few steps as Helen was making that dish, and you may have suspected as much. But if you want to try Brian Terry's braised fennel in that amazing citrus mojo, you can find the recipe at newyorkerradio.org. It comes from his book, Vegetable Kingdom, which came out earlier this year.
Hi, I'm Roz Chast from The New Yorker. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by NetSuite. Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on delivering your product or service, the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified platform. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/New Yorker. netsuite.com/New Yorker.
There are four questions Jews ask to mark Passover every year. This Passover is leading many of us to ask more questions, once tied to our identity as Jewish Americans. I'm Matt Katz, and on the next Notes from America, we'll talk about hard conversations happening in Jewish communities right now, how we can heal our divisions, and why this Passover feels different. Available wherever you get podcasts.
Every year since 1932, well, not every year, but close, The New Yorker has published a poem called Greetings, Friends. It comes out around Christmas, and it's a way of recalling the people and the events of the outgoing year. Staff writer Ian Frazier has been writing the annual Greetings, Friends since 2012. Here's Ian.
Friends, one and all, let us unmute, excite the timbrel and the lute. Make merry with our pots and pan. The hour is 7, so we can. Shout from the balcony or lawn for joy at what will soon be gone and praises sing for what is here, the end to this undreamt of year. Commune with us, dear friends, while we strew gifts abundant round the tree. And help us pick out something nice for New York's Dr. David Price, the Bronx's Dr. Ernest Patty, every nurse in Cincinnati, Dr. L. Woodward of UMiss, Dr. Purnell, she's our own Chris, LA's Dr. Anna Darby, Arizona's Dr. Barbie, Harold Varmus, the Nobeller, doc of reputation stellar, Ashley Bartholomew, RN, and when we check the list again, it unscrolls out across the floor with healthcare stalwarts by the score.
By the millions.
Heroes true. And lose their student loan debts, do. As we replay 2-0 in slow-mo, a Christmas cheer for Andrew Cuomo is not amiss, nor would it be for bat virologist Xi Zhongli, Steak Diane, the cool mask maker, Dolly Parton, Peter Baker, Jennifer O'Malley-Dillon, Issa Rae, Calvin Bud Trillin, Stacey Abrams, Mikey Sherrill, Andrew Ray, and Colin Farrell. The passing comet Neowise, which, lacking hands, can't sanitize them, yearns to be the wise men's star instead, and shining from afar lays tender beams on A. Blinken, Dr. Fauci, and, we're thinking too, on David Miliband, Alalia Bundles, Michael Land, Gretchen Whitmer, Fearless Gov, John Ossoff, who we're so fond of, Chris Krebs, and Tyler, the creator. Brightly and not one bit later, it shines on Amy Westervelt, whose podcast we have always felt is great. On Alice Oswald, too, and similarly on a few deserving folks like James McBride, Fern Finkel, Brooklyn's courtroom pride, Reed Singer, Mr. Brokaw, Tom, Meg Knox, and wondrous Rosa Baum. Yay for Jack and Marta Handy, and our old pal Peter Canby. A super surge of Christmas glee to Joe and Jill from me and thee, and all good things to Kamala and Doug from us and Mamala. This year, just in case you wondered, Roger Angel turned 100. Unequaled master of this rhyme from back when it was in its prime, he rocks. And so does Peggy Moorman, who is the best, and that's for sure, man. To those who lift us up, Godspeed. We hope Josh Gad has all he'll need. For Alexander Vindman and Bro Yevgeny, we've a plan to wish them both benignity, and with no loss of dignity, shout season's blessings to Jack Black, mystery writer Stephen Womack, Jay Inslee, John Hickenlooper, David Chichester, Chris Cooper, with, by the by, a friendly hi to VP Pence's pensive fly. Should Christmas comfort be deployed, may it descend on Terrence Floyd, Philonis Floyd, and their relations. Rev Al, thanks for your oration. May peace, whatever peace there be, enfold the family arbory. May justice come to all who thirst and hunger for it through the worst. Dear friends, if we could rhyme away the year's vast losses, we might say these stumbling lines were justified as right in step with Christmastide. Does meter link up hope and history? The only rhyme word here is mystery. Let gladness rise, despite. Love one another, routs the night. And kindness is a folding chair we carry with us everywhere. In depth of winter, prospects brighten. Mighty streams of light will lighten the miles ahead and goodness reign once more. The angels' grand refrain.
Ian Frazier. You can read Greetings, Friends at newyorker.com. I'm David Remnick. That's our show for today. And if you're celebrating Christmas, I hope you have an absolutely merry one despite it all. We'll be back with you next week.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is a co-production of WNYC Studios and The New Yorker. Our theme music was composed and performed by Merrill Garbus of Tune Yards, with additional music by Alexis Quadrado. This episode was produced by Alex Barron, Emily Botine, Ave Carrillo, Rhiannon Corby, Kalalia, David Krasnow, Gofen and Putubwele, Louis Mitchell, Michelle Moses, and Stephen Valentino, with help from Allison McAdam, Meng-Fei Chen, and Emily Mann.
Additional help this week from Julie Conquest.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported in part by the Chirina Endowment Fund.